What a great day, you guys. So, is Dragonlance on its way to 5th edition? Well, the new Unearthed Arcana seems to say so. Hello and welcome, Heroes, to the Crit Academy. I am your host, Justin. Ooh. We hope to inspire you with creative content that you can bring with you on your next D&D adventure. I am super excited for today's topic. I was a big fan of the Dragonlance books. I don't know if either of you have read them.
Unfortunately, no.
I've read a little bit of them.
It's a pretty great setting, and I absolutely fell in love with it reading through some of the books. It's a very prominent right alongside the Dark Sun setting, so... for those people that are out there like me, we're really excited for it.
I'm just amazed we're getting any Dragonlance stuff after the lawsuit.
There's a lawsuit?
Last year,
yeah, it was huge.
Oh, not huge enough for me to
notice. I remember hearing something about it. I don't know what it was, though.
Basically, they hired like the old authors to make new books. Wizards wouldn't approve the draft, even though their contract obligated them to. So the authors took them to court about it?
Oh, did the authors win?
They sold out of court.
Reading Rainbow.
Love Reading Rainbow. All right. So I want to kind of, before we get into the details of the Unearthed Arcana, I want to kind of talk a little bit about the Dragonlance setting.
Yes.
It started, it was a very prominent setting that came out of early D&D. It's the world of Kryn in the Kryn space solar system. What's really cool is that sets it really apart for me is the fact that the magic society is based around, or some of them are based around, like the three moons that the world has, and actually we see that in the subclass that we're going to be talking about today.
Kind of a neat one, actually.
Yeah, and Dragonlance was created by Laura and Tracy Hickman, and expanded by Tracy Hickman and Margaret, I think it's Weiss, under the direction of TSR Inc., which is really cool, which led from it being a set of adventures into an entire campaign setting, which I think was done really, really well. And so there's a lot of good short stories that were contributed and that really brought the world of Kryn to life. It is kind of like our world in the fact that it's mostly water, but it's mostly got like three major continents and a couple smaller ones. I think if I recall right, the main continent where most of the stories take place was Ancelon. And I don't know if I'm saying that right. That's how I've always said it, which is really cool. But it's just like any other high fantasy setting. You got dwarves, gnomes, elves, minotaurs, all those sorts of thing. But one that really set them apart was the Kendar. And honestly, this is something I was reading. Some people don't like the Kendar.
Kendar? I thought it was Kender. I thought it was like a play off the word Kinder as in child.
Yeah.
Well,
the Kendar were basically the Dragonlance's version of the halflings, so...
Well, they wanted to really separate themselves, so that's actually one of the features we're going to talk about today is the Kendar, and it started out as Kinder, K-I-N-D-E-R, but they ended up changing it because the goal was to be Kinder, so they ended up changing it to Kender. It's a whole thing, but they basically were like kleptomaniacs, and I guess some people didn't like that, especially in the 5th edition, I could see, because it's no longer their kleptomaniacs, it's stuff just disappears around them because they're curious.
Right.
Which is interesting.
Well, that's always how it worked, too. The problem, though, was the reason where the hate came from was because they had a lack of ownership, if you will.
Yep.
And they were naturally curious. Oh, what's this thing? They put it in their pockets. And not necessarily all players knew how to roleplay that, if you will, so they would also steal from the party.
Yep.
I'll take a look at it later. Where's my inhaler?
And so I think that they did this really well. So let's... We're going to talk about some of the unique details about it. The Kendar are short and statured and all that jazz, which I think is fun. Ian already mentioned that they're kind of like halflings, except they were like kleptos. So here they are native to the Kryn world, which is really cool. They are very scrawny. They got elven ears, but they're not as like plunky as hobbits are typically portrayed. Yep. So I think that or halflings, I guess, too. So that's a really good change in my opinion. But what's really cool is some of the features that they got. Obviously, they're a humanoid. They're small. They move 30 feet, but they have Brave, just like the gnome, I believe. Or is that Halfling?
I feel like it's Halfling.
Okay, it might be Halfling. But what's really cool is they get the Kender Ace. So starting at third level, you possess a magical ability to pull an item out of a bag or another container as a bonus action.
What's this do?
You basically reach into one of these objects and just grab something, and there's a Kender Ace's die table that's 1d6 that gives you a multitude of random things. It goes anywhere from a simple weapon of your choice to 5d6 gold pieces to a random trinket from the player's handbook, which is our player's handbook trinket table, a grappling hook, a crowbar. Basically, you can expand this. The DM can expand this as much as they want, but pretty much anything, not more than 10 gold pieces, which is really cool. The catch, though, is, and I know what you guys are thinking, I can pull out 5d6 gold pieces out of my pocket regularly?
That's exactly what I'm thinking.
Well, everything glimmers softly and disappears after an hour.
Oh.
So, Kendar Thief, anyone? buy stuff with it and then go sell it somewhere else and the money just poof, disappears.
Oh.
I think that's really cool.
Yep. I definitely think that's them trying to, of course, compensate for their old habits. Yes. But I'm not sure how well that's going to necessarily work out.
Well, they actually go into a little farther than that with the some of the other features. And I think that's really cool. Right, before we go on any farther with the Kender, what do you guys think about this Kender Aces feature?
Now that I know it disappears in 1 hour, it sounds a lot more fun, and you can take advantage of it, like what you just said. It's no different than the Eldritch Knight who can make his weapon come back.
Yes, yes. We had that happen in one of our games. Yeah. Rowan was an Eldritch Knight with the bonded blade and sold the bonded blade and then just conjured it back to herself.
Way to break the game.
I know there's been a few times where we encountered some guards who were clearly looking for bribes to get let into the city. I'm like, here you go. Here's a platinum piece, which I cream with presentation.
It's easy to trick them, too. So there is one thing. They do get another feature. So now that we've talked about the Kender Aces, they get a feature that is screams, I'm playing a Kender Bard. They get Taunt. They have a supernatural ability to home in on a creature's emotional raw nerves and basically craft a taunt that flusters the target. As a bonus action, you can unleash a barrage of insults to a creature within 60 feet of you that can hear and understand you. The target must succeed a wisdom save or have disadvantage on the next attack roll. You can use this number of times equal to your proficiency bonus. I love this.
Part of me also thinks, like, you need a feature for that?
I really do enjoy this. Do you think it... I don't know. I really think this is screaming fun bard mechanics, because not only is it a bonus action, it's not a spell, it's an ability.
Yep.
Which is interesting, which means it probably can't be counterspelled or anything like that. How often does it come back? I think it's when you finish a long rest. So even at level one, when you pick this race, you can really cause trouble for any enemies attacking your allies, which I think is really, really cool.
We're looking at taunt, right?
Yeah, the taunt feature. So overall, what do you guys think about that? That's all he's got to do is gotta cackle. The fact that it's not magic, I think it makes it, and it's a bonus action, makes it superior to Vicious Mockery.
Yep.
The way I'm seeing this is, normally when you hear of an ability that's like taunt, it's saying, oh, come and get me, and you're taunting the enemy to come to you. Mm-hmm. In this case, it's more like an annoying child sitting off in the corner calling you a dickhead or something like that. You're like, motherfucker, and he just keeps distracting you.
I'm thinking of the guy from Happy Gilmore. You suck, you jackass! That's the first thing I thought of when I saw this.
Did you become a thief because you're an orphan and no one loves you? Shut up!
So that's pretty much the Kender. I really like it. I think it's fun. If you want to follow along with us make our way through the Unearthed Arcana content, please head on over to CritAcademy.com and check out the blog for this episode. There is a link directly to the PDF for the Unearthed Arcana, or you can go Google it. But we appreciate the traffic, and you can get our other notes.
I am now picturing the taunt as a child who has zero filter. This is what I've done under mine.
Now, as we talk about the Lunar Magic Sorcerer subclass, I do want to preface this with, this is broken right now. It is so powerful in comparison to the other ones. I hope that that's an accident and not a sliding...
On the flip side, have you seen what the stuff from Tasha's does?
No, I mean, like, in raw like, utility and damage, this still outshines all that stuff, and that's a problem.
I mean, if you look at what the Clockwork Sorcerer does and the other one does in Tasha's, though, they're pretty ridiculous compared to the other sorcerers.
Well, I'm hoping that they bring it down a little bit. The other concern I have with this is that we're getting more to the overpoweredness that's in Strixhaven, which I don't like. Strixhaven introduced backgrounds with powers and features and stuff that I don't like because I hate power creep because it starts to make the early stuff obsolete.
Unfortunately, we've been seeing power creep in, well, every edition, really.
Well, but this one they managed to put it off pretty long.
Yeah.
So I am to share my own thoughts via their survey when I'm done because I want them to know that this, in my opinion, this isn't okay. But... that doesn't change the fact that this is really, really cool. So let's get into it. So the Lunar Magic is based, I think it says here, on many worlds the moon is revered celestial body with magical properties. On Kryn, the gods of magic are associated with the world's three moons. On the world of Toro, the god Selune uses the light of the moon to... battle darkness. On Eberron, you scholars of the Draconic prophecy decipher ancient secrets of the waxing and waning of the world's 12 moons. So when you pick up this lineage, you kind of get a little bit of versatility because of that, and I think it's really interesting. So at first level, when you pick this, you get to choose a manifestation of your power, which is pretty cool, and it starts with the Moonfire. Brandon, do you want to tell us about the Moonfire power?
Moonfire has a first level lunar magic feature. You can call down the radiant light of the moon on command. You learn the Sacred Flame spell, which doesn't count against the number of sorcerer cantrips you know. Ooh, that's nice. When you cast the spell, you can target one creature as normal, or target two creatures within range that are within 5 feet of each other.
And that is my first problem right there. You knew right where I was going. You took a cantrip and on a sorcerer who already has a meta magic to do this, and let him do it for free. Twin a spell, basically, so long as they're within range of 5 feet of each other. I like the idea of giving them Sacred Flame. I don't like the idea that it does it to two creatures. I would say in Wizards of the Coast, Chris, I know you're listening, maybe that if the first creature that's targeted succeeds the save, maybe then you can hit another one. And they might both fail, but I think them both doing two target is not okay.
Yeah, but they still got to be within 5 feet of each other.
So? That's not a hard goal to accomplish.
It's also not a hard thing to avoid if you're the DM.
Oh, see, now you're getting an attack. It's tactics to counter the players. And I don't like that at all.
Yeah, well, there's a balance there, but hey.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
If you think it's broken, unbreak it.
Garwin says... damn it. Garwin says, I don't know if it's official D&D or if it's just the community calling the core books being updated in D&D 5e. Yeah, they haven't called it 5.5e. That's definitely the community, but... why not?
But given what we know, 5.5 does not seem out of line.
Yeah, because that you've had that in the past with the third edition. All right.
And 4th, for that matter, with Essentials.
Oh, yeah, Essentials was like a mid-grade to it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So at first level, besides getting the broken Moonfire, Ian, do you want to tell us about the Lunar Embodiment? This is cool. Yep. I love this mechanic.
This is so neat.
It actually kind of is. You want additional spells when you reach certain levels, as you do with a lot of archetypes, but what makes this unique is the fact that there's three different lunar phases that you can adapt to: full moon, new moon, and crescent moon, and each one has its own spell list.
Yes. That's so cool.
That's the short version of that. And you can change on the long rest.
Yes. So this gives you a lot of versatility, and it almost is like a lesser version of the wizards preparing different spells, right?
And just like for like a short version, like a full moon's like Fairy Fire, Moonbeam, Mass Cure Wounds, New Moons, Dissonant Whispers, Darkness, Mislead, or Crescent Moon is Sanctuary, Phantom Steed, or Dream.
Yeah. That's really, really cool. And so that's just one of them.
And they
you can tell that they're categorized, right?
Yeah.
Like the new moon is more dark based. You've got, you know, Curse and Dissonant Whispers and Black Tentacles and all that stuff. And then full moon is dealing with Moonbeam and Fairy Fire, Mask Your Wounds. So, and you can change this at long rest, which I think gives you a lot of fun versatility.
Until you don't, but that's until you don't.
So that to me was a very interesting mechanic.
They're missing a moon phase.
Well, maybe they just decided three was plenty.
Yeah. Well, they're missing a moon phase.
Whatever. So, at level six, they get the Lunar Boons, which I think is pretty cool, which basically, influences your meta magic. Each lunar phase is associated with spells in the following school.
That's so cool.
The full moon, the new moon, and the crescent moon. Full moon is abjuration and conjuration spells. New is evocation and necromancy. There's that darkness I was talking about. Crescent moon is divination and transmutation. So whenever you use a meta magic from a lunar spells table that's associated with the lunar phase that you are in, God, that seems complicated, you can reduce the sorcery points by one to a minimum of zero. Some of your meta magic can cost 0 points.
Which is crazy.
Which is another point that I'd like to say that I think it should be a minimum of one.
Now, it is worth...
Except for a cantrip, maybe.
Yeah. It is worth noting that you can... only do this the number of times per day equal to your proficiency bonus.
Yeah. So it does limit it, but there's a lot you can do with a zero cost meta magic.
It's like, yeah, if you put this in the right player's hands, it can be kind of crazy. Yeah. So, although inversely, if your players can do it,
so can the monsters. Garwin says, I can imagine wizards accidentally making your core subclasses way more powerful and making all expanded subclasses obsolete. I don't know that I can see that, but I definitely understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, that's always something you gotta worry about too, but all of that said, some of the stuff in the PHB is still some of the best stuff. But
yeah.
No, I said some, not all.
So, there's a couple more powers you get, waxing and waning at sixth level, where you get greater control over their phases. As a bonus action, you can spend a sorcery point to change your lunar phase. That's really cool. So now that versatility can come into play. The lunar empowerment, Brandon, would you like to tell us a little bit about that? We have to get
the lunar empowerment is the 14th level lunar magic feature. The power of a lunar phase saturates your being. Whenever you choose a lunar phase to affect your magic, you also gain the following benefit associated with that phase. On the full moon, you shed bright light in a 10-foot radius and dim light for an additional 10 feet. In addition, you and creatures of your choice have advantage on saving throws while within the bright light you shed.
So you can be a paladin. Got it.
Yes.
On the new moon, you have advantage on dexterity stealth checks. That makes sense, because the whole dark feature you were talking about.
Yep.
Being sneaky. In addition, while you are in dim light or darkness, attack rolls have disadvantage against you.
I'm not going to lie. Part of me thought when I read this, like,
don't you already have that? That's
well,
what I thought.
Well, at least against creatures that don't have dark vision,
but this applies even if they do.
Yeah.
Crescent moon, you have a resistance to necrotic and radiant damage,
which I think is really cool. Demolish. So that one's pretty more straightforward than some of the other more complex mixes. Ian, do you want to tell us about the last one in a general census, and we can move on?
Yep, the lunar phenomenon. Yep. As a bonus action, you can tap into the lunar phases that you're currently in, and as part of your bonus action, you can change your lunar phase using the waxing and waning feature, and you can immediately use the following powers. Full moon, you can radiate intense moonlight up to 30 feet, and creatures of your choice have to roll a con save or be blinded.
I love it.
And creatures of your choice also regain 3d8 hit points.
It's a healing power. That's so cool.
A healing and a debuff power.
That's great.
Yeah. New moon, you can basically radiate gloom within 30 feet, and anyone of your choice who fails a dex save must take a 3d10 necrotic damage and have its speed reduced to nothing.
Stop, bitches!
And you can become invisible to the end of your next turn, or until you attack or cast a spell. And then crescent moon, you can slip through light and darkness, and you can teleport up to 60 feet away, and you can also regain resistance to all damage until the start of your next turn.
Now, there is a limit, thank God.
Yeah. And once you use use a phase bonus action, so you can't do so again until you finish a long rest, unless you spend 5 sorcery points, but you're level 18 at this point.
Yeah. Damn. Yeah. So, there's a question that popped up that said, during future supplements by DM's Council, being released by WotC, how much of a power creep is allowed to not totally overshadow the older books? I say there shouldn't be any. They're creative enough. There's no reason that there needs to be an imbalance in the game.
Unfortunately, though, we've definitely seen some imbalances here and there, even with the discussion with Monsters of the Ultimate Multiverse, which I won't get into because that can be a full rant on itself, but yeah. Hey.
I would say, and now that's just Justin's opinion,
yeah.
Which is always right, so listen to me, WotC. I know Chris and I know Chris and Crawford are listening. They're creative enough that they can find a variety of ways to do things without outshining the typical. I mean, you're going to have some that are a little stronger and some that are a little weaker, but at the weaker end, there's going to be a trade-off there. Usually it's utility or survivability,
yeah.
or something along those lines. And I think that they've managed to find a good balance
for the most part
until Tasha's came out. Yeah. But I think that was more of a result of all the versatility that they added.
Well, even Tasha's, there was some stuff here and there that's like, oh my god, this is freaking ridiculous. And there was also a few that's like, well, I even use this.
Yeah. And I think you're always going to have that.
Yeah.
What?
Back to this whole lunar thing. You know, I'm surprised that they didn't add was lunar and solar eclipses to affect them in some way.
That's good. Maybe I'll write one. Who knows? I can handle it. All right. So that'll do it for the lunar magic. I really like the lunar magic feel. I think that the more complex features adds a bit of fun complexity to an otherwise more simplified spellcaster. I mean, not as simple as the Warlock, but... All right, they also have a background here called the Knight of Salamania.
I thought they said salami.
Salami. Salmania. These are equivalent... These are the equivalent of, like, holy warriors of virtue, right? Now, yes, the Knights of Salmania have in the past in the books had their own corruption, what form of anything... does, but some of the greatest heroes come from these. So, what I really think is really cool about that is they touch on the typical proficiencies, athletic, survival. You get the insignia, all that pretty interesting stuff. But I really like the feature. You gain a Squire of Salmania feat presented later in this document, which we'll talk about.
Yeah.
Actually, we probably should talk about it right now since we're discussing it. In addition, the Knights Salami. provide you free modest lodging and food for their fortress. Now,
the Knights Salmonella.
This comes back to what I said I don't like about Strixhaven.
How did I miss the part where it says you gain a feat when you get this background?
Yeah, anyway. So, that's how all the Strixhaven books are, and I don't like that. If a player said they wanted to play one,
You can't really say no.
Well, I can say no, but I don't typically,
I mean, within the realm of that setting.
Yeah, right. But for me, I don't like it because that's the only book up until this unearthed Arcana that introduced feats to backgrounds. And I don't know how I feel about that, but I understand why they're doing it because there's a lot of people that wish they had more influential options, right?
Hmm. Yeah, and the other thing, too, is like I've always criticized how feats were implemented in 5th edition in the first place.
Yeah. So the Squire of Salmania,
Salmonella.
feat. It gives you martial training, which means you gain proficiency with medium armor and martial weapons from a background. And you get defensive rider. You have advantage on saving throws made to avoid falling off a mount. And you get encouraging rally. When another creature you can see within 30 feet of you makes a saving throw, you can use your reaction to inspire them. If the target can hear you and understand you, they gain advantage on the save. You can use this... once you use this reaction, you can't do so until you finish a long rest. So
my knee-jerk reaction was with the martial training part. I'm like, I feel like most characters who would take that background would already have half that stuff anyway.
Maybe, but it's still a feat that provides a mechanical benefit. What I loved about backgrounds to begin with was the fact that they were flavor-based almost entirely besides the proficiencies.
Yeah.
And that was something I really enjoyed. So that's just Justin Knights of Salami. Yeah. Salmonella. anyways, so overall, that's kind of my only beef with this, because that's another power creep, right?
Yep.
Now, when they do the 5.5 or whatever, and they do this to all the builds, then you're no longer saying it's compatible with regular content. You're saying the other content can be used, but it's inferior, which is how they're going to sell more books.
Huh.
And I know that's what they're going for. Shame on you guys.
And we've seen this before.
Yes. But it was bad in some other editions, but I think it's been expected for 5e for a while, I guess. There's a couple of, what do you guys think about that background right off the bat, besides my rant about it being
broken? I thought the flair for the background itself was fine, but like I said, I think they're trying to compensate for
the size of their sword.
Well, for some, this overall, that's been kind of a problem that always kind of be adjusted in this edition, but at the same time, it makes it so OP in a way where it's like, okay, now what?
Right.
Now, granted, this is rooted to if you're just using this setting,
right?
Which I think is what they're going for. But still,
yeah. Whatever I see,
it's a salami quote. Let us go for tomato we bacon.
I've never really walked out on a job before.
But you're about to.
But it's getting really close. No, that is something I know. Something I like about the backgrounds is that you get the proficiency bonuses, and sometimes it says, okay, you get an extra, like, you get a deck of cards, or maybe here's a few pouches of extra gold or something. And seeing a feat come with a background makes me a little nervous.
But yeah, that's my thing too.
Yeah.
And they did it in Strixhaven. I was like, oh, that's dumb. Why did they do that? At least when you got a specific setting book, you can play with a little bit of that stuff because it's tied to that setting. But then you're still throwing DMs under the bus who then might want to have to say no to that.
Although, as a kind of my rebuttal, though, in the past, how much benefit do you often get from a lot of backgrounds in the first place?
I think that depends on if the player and the DM bring them into the story.
Exactly. And I think at least in this way, you're at least guaranteeing a benefit aside from proficiency skills. If that makes any sense?
No, I see what you're saying, and I will leave it at that. I understand that, but I...
I'm just saying they managed to upgrade all of the backgrounds in a way.
And that's what I said. If they, when they really release the books at 5.5, if all the backgrounds get something like this, then it balances out. But you're still going to have people with old content that won't.
Well, I think if they at least take the old backgrounds, but then give, say, you also gain this feat along with it, then at least it's relatively
even? And I can see that. At least then they're trying to standardize it. But that's just...
Yeah, that seems fair.
And brilliant, and I applaud it.
<They'll see you. laughs>
All right, so there is another background here. It is the Mage of High Sorcery. On Kryn, the Mages of High Sorcery are brutal. They literally have like contests. The test, I think, is if I remember is what it's called, where they actually send wizard or mages through these gauntlets, and either they succeed or they die. It's so bad.
I don't think I've gone to that part of the books yet.
It's so bad. I wouldn't want to be a mage of high sorcery because you're basically giving to the player, you did this great achievement while others did not. But yeah, so I think that's an interesting one. You want to tell us a little bit about some of the features that you get, Brandon, before we move on?
Yes. It won't go through those. Go proficiency.
No, just what is the feature? Features, everyone can assume that the mage is going to get Arcana.
Yeah.
That does make sense. Okay, yeah. Feature, Initiate of High Sorcery. You gain the Initiate of High Sorcery feat, presented later in this document. In addition, the Mages of High Sorcery provide you with free, modest lodging and food indefinitely and any occupied tower of High Sorcery and for one night at the home of an organization member.
Same thing as
the other one.
So, as a player, I feel like anytime if I have a feature like that, anytime we go into a town, is this here? I know it happens when I have the hero background. Like, I need to find somebody to like, give me shelter.
There it is.
And I feel like this is an example of, I have this background, but it almost never comes up. Even though I said repeatedly, I have this background, people should know who I am. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, sorry if I missed that.
I'm not pinging that on just you. I'm just pinging it on DMs in general.
I feel that right here.
Unless people remind me, I'll forget.
No, you're not being attacked.
It's like, by the way, I have a criminal contact. It's like, fuck, I forgot about that. Okay, fine.
Yes.
You know this now.
Yeah.
Definitely need to have that stuff out and available. All right, so the Initiative of High Sorcery feat basically gives you access to a first level spell, with restrictions based on the moon, which moon you choose, and cantrips.
Yeah.
So and it's basically the isn't the spell adept thing like that?
Kind of. And it's also worth noting too that the these feats do fork into other feats of like various orders within both organizations that we don't have time to get into.
Now that is something I would like to see expanded upon, and I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah. I know we don't have time to go into the rest of the feats. You can go to the and open up the Unearthed Arcana, but I like the idea of almost you're basically taking feats that specialize.
Now, the more I kind of read this document, I'm like, I guess technically the DMG does indicate that you can give extra features to players, mm-hmm. and feats can be one of them, and I kind of feel like these can potentially go off that. If...
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that. So there's a lot to this. Obviously, this isn't going to be... This is just playtest material, so if you're listening, Jeremy and Chris, and I know you are, because I know you watch us because we're great... please make some adjustments to the lunar mage, because it is broken as hell.
I could definitely see like the magic thing if you limit it to like just cantrips, for example.
Yes, I agree, and that's what I think I made a point of that too. So, so we got a question here, I think, from the DM's Council. What would be your method for letting players take advantage of some of the lesser used features in each background? Example, not only picking a background for only the proficiencies and skills.
First and foremost, reminding the DM that you have those?
Yes. So I'm guilty of this, but I do make an effort. I know, for instance, in our Plane Shifters campaign, which you can watch every other Friday on our YouTube channel right here. one of the core aspects of the game right now is them getting from Ravnica home, and so the Artificer is a core part of that.
He's not dead.
And he died. So as the DM, I gotta figure out what the hell I'm gonna do.
And to be fair, we did discuss some of that behind the
scenes.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So, but a lot of that is bringing it into the story in a way that makes sense. Like, for instance, if Brandon's playing a criminal rogue, and I know that he's got it. First, you got to be reminded, because if you're not paying attention, it's easy to forget about that stuff. You can include that in your design for when they're seeking out information. Because I think a player will lose their mind if you turn and say, what's the name of one of your characters?
Malachite.
This information you guys are seeking. You believe that you might be able to find a contact that can help you locate said information. Now, a criminal contact. It's as simple as that, because they're going to have to go look for that information anyway, right? You just say, how are they going to get it? Well, this guy's a criminal. This guy's an artificer. He probably, what's the background you got?
Sage, probably.
So he's got the sage. So maybe Merle goes to a wizard's tower to seek the information, and Malachite goes and looks in the underground. You basically just roleplay it out from there. That's about is the best you can do. Just think about those things when deciding how they can discover the information. Yeah. Regardless if it's an investigation check to find something, they're going to approach it differently. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that would be my recommendation. Sorry, there's a lot going on. I'm trying to keep up with it.
Hello, magistrate. I'm looking for information regarding this.
So for the main topic, I think that will do it today. I really am excited for Heroes of Kryn. I love that D&D is beginning to expand to some of their other settings. I'm really, really looking forward to Dark Sun, which I know is going to come, because if it doesn't, Chris, Jeremy, we're going to have a problem. but anyways, that'll do it for our main topic. Before we move on to our honor tips and tricks, I have to show you guys something.
What the hell is this?
We've partnered with and become affiliates with Only Crits. These guys are awesome. Check this bad boy thing out, right?
When did this happen?
Well, you've been gone for months.
I've been gone for 2 weeks.
It sure seems like months.
Oh, my God.
All right, so I got this really cool thing. First of all, it comes with a nice little dice. You got this really nice inscription of a dragon on it. It's a nice little dice holder. It can hold pens and stuff. The thing that I like more than anything... Where's your phone?
Do those dice have dicks in them?
The fact it doubles as a dice?
Yes! Pack? So the dice that they actually sell to you have little... This one's got pink ducks in it. It's
oh,
so
ducks.
Cute.
I said dicks, and you said yes, and I thought that was fucking hilarious.
You said ducks.
You got
no,
penis dice.
They're so those beautiful. Are two very different they're things. Good qualities. This one, I think, has, like, weapons in it, like axes or something, which is pretty neat. They make really good quality. My phone's not here, but I sit my phone right here. And you can scroll through your phone with all your other stuff. It's pretty cool. They got all kinds of cool stuff. The dice are pretty nice. There's a place, basically, it's a portable pack.
It's for your mini, maybe.
There's a place for minis. And what's cool is it's held together by magnets. And it's actually pretty strong. So consider checking this out and checking out Pick Up Some Other Dice. We are affiliates, so we do get a bit of a commission for it. But you also save 10%. So we all win. They get a sale, we get a kickback, and you get a discount and an amazing product. Yeah. The dice are awesome. That's all I've been using. And I haven't rolled a one yet.
And
of course, I've only had two games with them.
That's your curse. That is your curse right there.
And the code is
make
CRIT.
Sure, yeah, make sure you, yeah, make sure to use discount code CRIT.
Shop only crits?
Yes.
Step into a mystical world.
Said only crits, but it was only fans, but for dice rolling.
Dude, that's $1 million idea right there.
It's like
only crits?
It's like there might be a market for that.
D&D. After hours.
Oh, let's see if I can still do it.
All right.
And now, what you've all been waiting for, our Unearthed Tips and Tricks segment, where we bring you new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
Our character cast up today is Kobe, the adventurer.
Kobe.
Now, this is a mop-haired kid who manages to stand gangly, even at his short height, almost as if he was all knees and elbows. Their equipment is little more than reinforced hunting gear and a small bag of keepsakes.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Personality, ever the optimist, Kobe often finds the bright side of any situation. Their inexperience is evidenced by the fearsome monster they took as a name, Kobold.
They give him a...
Kobe Kobold?
They come from a small village many days' journey away from any trade cities. As such, they rely on their hunters to defend from raids instead of guards.
As far as motivations go, Kobe was always deemed too small for hunting and defense, but when local regent denied them protection from increased monster activity, they couldn't take it anymore. No one should be too small to protect, and if no one else would, Kobe would. Dobby would. The only problem, they have no training and experience to speak of.
Fine, I'll do it myself, but you don't know how. Shut up!
That's a small inconvenience. This was submitted by our Crit Nation member, Sartrian Penguin. Thank you so much. I think this is fun. I love the idea of a character who wants to help, but just has no experience.
Is this a dagger? Is this a sword? Short sword? Bastard sword? Do you know your shit? Look. All you need to know is the pointy end goes in the enemy. That's all you need.
Which one's the enemy?
Which one's the pointy end?
Oh, God.
Oh, no, we're in trouble. Dude, how hilarious would it be for a player to show up with their sword, end of their blade, wrapped in leather so they can hold it and beat somebody with the hilt?
You mean half-swording?
Is that a thing?
Yes.
Oh, Jesus.
What?
No, don't do that.
And the pommel's, like, sharpened, so they think it's a pickaxe when it's really a sword.
I love it. That'll do it for our character concept, Kobe the Adventurer.
Kobe.
Our monster variant today is the Arcforge Arbalest. If
that
this sounds familiar,
dangerous.
It's the sibling or the twin of our Arcforge Sentry. You're going to start with the Gargoyle stat block. You're going to lose False Appearance, Bite, Claws, and Fly. I know what you're thinking.
Gone.
Fly, super powerful, but
so,
we're going to deal with that by increasing damage. Skills, it's going to get proficiency in athletics and proficiency in perception. You're going to get damage immunities to poison, vulnerability to lightning, and condition immunities, charms, exhaustion, frightened, paralyzed, and poison. We're going to give it blind sight out to 10 feet and dark vision out to 120 with passive perception of 16. Now,
wow, that's really high.
Brandon, do you want to tell us about why we get to increase all the damage?
Let's see here. Anti-magic susceptibility. The Arcforge is incapacitated while in the area of an anti-magic field. If targeted by dispel magic, the Arcforge must succeed on a con save against the caster's spell save DC or fall unconscious for 1 minute.
Ooh.
That's if the players figure that out.
If.
Ian, do you want to tell us about the next feature?
Yep, the Death Burst. When it dies, it explodes in a burst of crackling arcane energy.
Ooh, nice.
Each creature within 10 feet of it must succeed on a DC 14 dex save, taking 48 lightning damage.
Ouch.
And can't take a reaction until the start of the next turn if they fail a save, or just half damage on a successful save. And after that, they also get the slam attack.
Slam!
Slam!
Which is basically a 2d8 plus 4 bludgeoning damage. And if the target is a creature, it must succeed on a DC 14 con save, or it can't take reactions until the end of its next turn.
Justin, you suck!
God. Arc Blaster. Range spell attack, plus 4 to hit. Range 150 to 300. Slash 300. I just found out that was something totally different than what I thought it was yesterday.
That was so funny.
Fuck
right
you.
In the middle of our show.
It's so bad. So bad.
Yeah.
It's like, why does he have disadvantage? Because it's between this. Like, that's not how that works. I've been DMing for 4 years. I've been doing it wrong this whole time. let's see. One creature. Hit as a... equals 5, 1d6 plus 2 slashing damage, plus 2, 1d4 lightning damage. A target must succeed, a target must make a DC 14 dexterity saving throw. The target takes 18 lightning damage and can't take reactions until the start of its next turn on a failed save, or have as much damage on a successful one. So you're tasing them.
Yes.
You're tasing them from a range.
But wait, there's more. We're going to also give it Arc Burst that recharges on a 6. The Arc Forge releases a flashing orb of crackling energy that explodes on impact at a point that it can see within 150 feet. The energy pulses out in a chaotic blast. Each creature in a 20-foot radius centered on the point must succeed a DC 14 dex saving throw or take 66 lightning damage on a failed save, half as much on a successful one. If the target fails to save by 5 or more, they are stunned until the end of their next turn.
Is that BFG much?
Hey, I took away its fly and I gave it a weakness. It gets to blow shit up.
And it retreats on a 6.
Yes. We have one more feature here.
Yeah, the reaction. Retreating counter. When an attack misses the Arc Forge, it can use its reaction to move up to half its speed and make an Arc Blaster attack. Oh, you missed. Fuck you.
I would be lying if I said this wasn't inspired at all by Mega Man. The Arc Blaster thing.
Yeah.
This is pretty straightforward. Because we weakened it by stripping its fly, it was only necessary to give it some more damage, but then also giving it anti-magic susceptibility just was something that I felt was necessary because it is a construct. So, what do you guys think?
It sounds like a death wish.
It sounds shocking.
Oh my god.
I hate you. All right, that's pretty straightforward. I don't know if the image has been shown up. The artwork for this thing is absolutely awesome. I finished writing up the lore and the stat block and everything for it, so that'll be going out to patrons this Tuesday. So if you want more monsters with lore, backstory, not just backstory, but lore that you can feed with knowledge checks to your players, which is something that's really fun that I enjoy doing. So
that would scare me.
All right, that'll do it for our monster, the Arc Forge Arbalest. Brandon, would you like to tell us about our encounter today?
Our encounter for this week's podcast is the Unwitting Delivery. The characters are hired by a merchant named Murlog. Okay. He needs guardians to protect his precious shipment all the way to a major city. The journey by horse is a 3-month journey. Good God. But time is precious. He believes there is a teleportation circle in an abandoned wizard's tower just a single month ride from their current location. He is hoping to hire a spellcaster who can enable it. He believes this is the safest and fastest way to ensure his delivery is on time. It turns out to throw him on the other side of the planet.
Most of what Murlog says is true, though he lies about what he is carrying. He informs the party that he is delivering goods to a medicine woman. The truth is, he is being blackmailed into taking a wagon with the glyph of warding set on it. Additionally, the glyph is designed to explode just about the end of the trip if he doesn't deliver it and contacts his blackmailer, or if he doesn't deliver it, if he and contacts his blackmailer. When this cart explodes, so does the one holding his family.
Oops. And the reason for the wizard's power is so he can gain enough time to seek aid from any who will help him save his family before the time's up. That's fair.
What do you guys think about this?
You ever see that movie Speed?
Yes.
That's what it makes me think of.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see the relation. This is definitely something that I thought was interesting because he's on a time frame, but he's trying to exploit it so he can do what's right.
Yeah.
In spite of the risk to his family. If that's not the most... That's a way to show that NPCs can be just as heroic or even more so than the player characters.
Yep.
Wow.
Especially what's interesting is when the characters succeed on some sort of insight check and realize he's lying. Because what are they going to think about it?
What are you really carrying?
That, or he's out for what?
Out to double cross him.
Yeah. Like, he might be doing something bad to them. So to me, that's really intriguing, and I like those sorts of... speed 3, true horsepower. I love it. All right, I think that'll do it for our encounter of the podcast, Unwitting Delivery. Ian, would you like to tell us about our magic item today?
Ooh, that sounds sexy.
I know. The magic item today is the Blood Crown. It is a wondrous, rare item. It is made from crystallized blood, which is seen as a gift of devotion.
What the fuck?
Your charisma score becomes 19 while you wear the crown, and it has no effect if your charisma is already at 19 or higher.
Nice.
Also, while wearing this crown, you have advantage on saving throws on resisting fear effects, and you may also approach the source of your fear. Well, your fear.
Holy shit.
I mean, you're wearing a crown of blood. What scares you at that point?
God. Additionally, as an action, you can exude the fearful presence of your deity. Each creature of your choice in a 15-foot cone in front of you must succeed on a wisdom save, DC 8 plus your proficiency bonus plus your charisma bonus, which is going to be really high because you're wearing a crown that boosts it up the hell up, or drop whatever it is holding and become frightened for the duration.
While frightened by this effect, a creature must take the dash action and move away from you by the safest route available on each of its turns, unless there is nowhere to move. If the creature ends its turn in a location where it doesn't have line of sight of you, it can make another wisdom save to try to break it. On a success, it ends the effect. Once the special action is used, you can't use it again until the next dawn. But yes, think about this.
I don't know where this came from, but I like it. It's a really cool idea.
It's neat.
Well, I'm glad you like it. It's one of the more simpler magic items. But it basically was a dark version of the intellect headband thing,
right,
which I think does the same boost to the intelligence stat. So I like anything that's got an awesome name, like the Blood Crown, just because it sounds awesome. Our Dungeon Master tip of the podcast is a quick chase improv. Turn-based tabletop RPGs are notoriously bad at creating compelling chase scenes. But dropping the need for miniatures and maps improves the situation a little bit. If you use a list to show who is running first, second, and third, that's usually enough to know how the chase is going. So ask each of your players for one primary action each turn and keep it going smoothly around the table. Force the slowest character to drop out of the chase after a round or two. So this basically means they're losing. Everyone else is outpacing them.
Yeah.
The chase may be resolved one way or another much faster than you think will with less formal movement and action rules, which I think is a good thing.
The point is to make it feel fairly quick. I think to drag out a chase scene is almost always counterproductive, and a quick chase can lead to a great twist or reversal. Mm-hmm. Now, for instance, a thief fleeing with the cleric's golden holy symbol is a clear moment that might lead right into an ambush.
Ooh.
With the slow dwarf warrior in full plate wildly out of position, time for quick thinking by a fleet-footed monk at the front.
Yeah, this comes right from Kobold's Guide to Game Mastering. If you have not checked out that book, it is amazing. So much good content. Kobold Press is awesome. I really think this is something that we really do struggle. That's why I totally went to skill challenges for quick chase scenes, because it's just easier.
That makes sense. And like when you were throwing us through the crumbling mountain.
Yeah.
Yeah. That.
You want to tell him about that?
He put us through a skill challenge through a cave we were trying to get out of, because there was this big old volcano like mountain was starting to collapsing on itself, and he's like, okay, I need you to do this. Oh, look, this bridge is out. What are you gonna do? Oh, we're gonna jump it. And it's like, my guy uses this special blast that lets him fly to the air. It's like, okay, you get advantage on it. And we just kept doing that, and I think we all escaped for except for two of us that got like stuck.
Yep.
Like, we need to get out of there, otherwise they're going to die.
Do you think that that was memorable because it was a skill challenge, or do you think it would have been more so if it was done with like minis and stuff?
I think it leaving it to the Theater of the Mind was the better idea.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And oh, look, no Ian to complain about it. I guess you don't get an opinion.
Anyway, just like, sit back, thank you. Fuck you.
Oh my goodness. Anyways, pretty straightforward. I recommend this Theater of the Mind, giving primary actions. This is a great opportunity for the DM to include core features of that person. So if you're fighting a barbarian, obviously letting them jump is going to, you can, you know, describe the tensing of their muscles as they do a big Hulk-like jump, while maybe a repelling blast warlock might jump and then blast the ground behind him with his repelling blast. That's what I was thinking of. Which is a nice way to do that. Dalcinia says there's actually action maps from 4E that were pretty much flowcharts with either or options for rolling to make past scenarios. How do I not know this? I own almost every single 4E book, and I am not familiar with this. Either I overlooked it or what, but I got to check that shit out. Send me where you found it, Dalcinia, now! Do it now! all right, that'll do it for our Dungeon Master tip, the Quick Chase Improv from Game Kobold's Guide to Game Mastering.
Yeet.
Our player tip of the podcast is, don't be a dick. Way to put the emotion behind it, Brandon.
Okay, don't be a dick! You can avoid dickitude by not going to the bathroom in the middle of the show.
He must have ate something spicy.
I wonder if he's on his phone, like, watching us right now. I was like, those motherfuckers.
Get feedback from Alicia in the house. All right, so knowing when to fight, everyone. Almost every monster you meet while on an adventure is dangerous, but not all of them are hostile. A lot of creatures in an adventure environment attack on sight. Yeah. So when something doesn't attack, it's really worth keeping your sword sheathed for a few minutes while you try to understand what's going on.
Yeah. Why would you want to talk to a monster? Well, there are a lot of things a friendly or neutral monster may be able to tell you about an adventuring environment, such as the location of any boss monsters.
How about the history of the local area?
Mm-hmm. The location of any prisoners.
How about the identity of an important enemy?
Information about disarming or avoiding a trap.
Oh, that's nice.
Instructions to open the secret door.
The weakness of a powerful monster in the area.
Clickety-clack.
Wait. What is the weakness of that monster? Because he's a dick.
He's screwing us all over, not just you guys.
How to get to the next level? What you give? You find like a lying monster is like, oh yeah, you can get to the next level by going to that room. You go to that room and you die.
The location of treasure. Ugh. All of this information may be lost if you kill everything on sight. And it's worth noting that even some hostile creatures are willing to talk to enemies before combat is joined. Dragons are notorious for this.
Yeah, they like hearing themselves
talk.
They
do. They're kind of like me. I bet you I was a dragon in a fantasy world.
Yeah.
This great piece of wisdom comes from our good friend MT Black and his book, The Art of War for D&D Players. You need to pick this shit up. It's got amazing tips in it.
That's a fantastic name for a book.
I might
actually
bring my copy of The Art of War just for this tip.
Sun Tzu. Yes, I love it.
I remember one time in the game, we convinced a mercenary that we were not there to cause trouble. Then we walked back in the room later. You killed the dragon, didn't you? Yep. Well, my pain's gone. Takes throws his backpack and leaves.
Alright, that'll do it for our show today. Before we close out today, as always, we like to give away fat loot. Brandon, what are we giving away today?
Veratrem's Tribal Siege?
Yes.
A Storm King's Thunder adventure. Fight off an ambitious young green dragon in this expansion for Storm King's Thunder. If you haven't done Storm King's Thunder, it's fun.
It's awesome.
Or can be dropped into any story. Well, then...
Okay, then.
Yeah. This adventure will bring your party to Wildham. A small town located in the Westwood.
Yeah. They come in and conquer, guys?
There they will face off with Veratrem, a young green dragon that has taken control of a local kobold tribe. If the adventurers think they can easily take the weak creatures, they have a surprise coming to them.
Ooh.
Harshly. It's like, we could take them on.
Garwin wrote us a damn book out.
Yeah.
Dark Souls.
All right. Who's our winner today?
Yeah. D what the fuck? Okay. DMYTROSSZILHAN.
Congratulations, you're the winner. If you didn't win, no problem. Head on over to CritAcademy.com and subscribe for your chance to win. We always give it away fat loot. We like to make it rain on all the Crit Nation, which is great.
Yep.
If you enjoy the show and you want to support us, please visit us at CritAcademy.com. Follow us on social media. Leave us a review. All that jazz. That'll do it for our show today. We want to thank everyone that stayed for our terrible jokes and our adult humor. I am your host, Justin.
Keep your blade sharp and spells prepared, heroes.
We're going to cover the monster cockatees.
The who?
The cockatees.
The cockatees?
Yeah, cockatees nuts. I've been hanging out with Kira, I'm sorry.
Oh my goodness. The jokes.